Self Talk Radio. This is Rebecca White, and this week we have a very special, a different topic for Heal Yourself Talk Radio. The book is called Pope Annalisa, and it's book one of the First Souls trilogy by Peter Canova. And while it's a fiction book, it sure does get your brain thinking. And like I was telling Peter before we came on live air, that I'm usually a speed reader, as I've told my listeners before, and I can get through a book real fast. There's so much intrigue and information in this book that, man, I had to just stop and keep going back. So he gave me some great advice. Just read all the way through it and then go back and reread it again. So I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. But before we have Peter come on, I want to give you some information about both the book and several awards that this book has won already. And it's such an impressive book that I'm not surprised at all the medals that it has won. Pope Annalisa, part of the information about it is what forces were at work when the unthinkable became reality and an African nun was elected the first female pope. Amid conflicting prophecies of destruction and renewal, she came. She is a healer, a miracle worker, a captivator of men's souls. But when demonic-looking symbols began appearing around the Vatican upon her arrival, were her enemies correct about her being the prophesied figure who will destroy the church and lead the world to order to ruin? Now, author Peter Canova has spent much of his life seeking to understand the forces that link humanity together at an unseen level. His former businesses, hotel management, shipping, and import-exporting, carried him around the world where he met a variety of spiritual figures, each of whom appeared in his life unsolicited and confirmed his conviction that spirit transcends the religious beliefs that tend to divide people. In Pope Annalisa, he explores an ancient spiritual tradition which cut across not only Judaism, Christianity and Islam, but also the so-called pagan mystery schools of ancient times. And like I was saying in the beginning, Pope Annalisa won 4 National Book Awards. The press release I'm going to read to you was from New York, New York on April 26, 2010. It says, we are pleased to announce that author Peter Canova's new book, Pope Annalisa, has won both the Nautilus and the Independent Publishers Book Awards for Fiction. The book swept the prestigious Nautilus Book Awards, winning 2 silver medals and 1 gold medal in 2 different categories, visionary fiction and spirituality. It's also taken another medal in the Independent Publishers Book Award. The path to the Nautilus Gold Medal Award was unanimous at all 3 judging levels, and the book obtained the highest scores in its category, seen it in some years. Now, the Nautilus Awards has one of the most rigorous judging processes of any National Book Award contest. The book must first pass 3 panels of judges located across the United States. The judges' panels are composed of people with successful careers as editors, writers, librarians, school teachers, and bookstore owners. The process is a deliberate course of examination and scrutiny designed to sort and separate books as they are measured against a carefully prepared list of notable characteristics. The IPBE, or Independent Publishers Award, is the largest book award competition in the world with nearly 4,000 total entries. Pope Annalisa's author, Peter Canova, now joins the ranks of best-selling authors and past winners, including Deepak Chopra, Eckhart Tolle, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Carolyn Mice, Barbara Kingsolver, Merrill Hemingway, Judy Collins, Greg Braden, Joel Olston, Andrew Whale, Gary Zukov, Daniel Pinchbeck, Francis Moore, Rianne Eisler, and Matthew Fox. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Peter Canova to Heal Yourself Talk Radio. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Rebecca. How are you? Nice to be with you today.
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, and I'm just so excited to talk to you. My main first question, honestly, after reading what I've gotten through so far is, what made you write such a book like this? I mean, it's so in-depth and so, the only word I can actually think of, Peter, is mind-blowing.
You know, it's really the culmination or confluence of different streams of my life that have been, I guess, working towards a convergence since the time I was probably a young adult. The actual story about the genesis behind the book and the idea behind it, I was always pretty spiritually oriented, and I was in a screenwriting class over a decade ago, and the instructor came in, and she kind of gave us a mandate, which is to bring in an idea that, you know, nobody has ever done before. That's a pretty tough assignment, but probably because of my spiritual orientation, I started thinking along a certain line or vector, and I said, well, okay, well, you know, we really haven't seen a female priest or certainly not a pope in the Catholic Church. And wouldn't that really be unusual? Mm-hmm. And then I thought along these lines, and I said, well, what would this person be like to be able to break into an institution that's been male-dominated for 2,000 years, and what would the world be like around her that something like this could be allowed to happen? And that's when I started to create the world of Pope Annalisa. At the time, I was in international business, and when I started to write the book, it was really kind of writing little segments of it here and there, little scenes in airplanes and hotel rooms and airports and places where I just had a spare moment because I was in a pretty intensive business at the time. But much of the work was a result of probably 30 years of research that I had done into spirituality. I was always, I guess, what you call a seeker. And I did a lot of research and reading, but much of the book, probably as much if not more, was a result of channeling through my own meditations. And so the product of the book was just a blend of all those different facets and events in my life.
Were you scared at all about writing a book like this? Because there's some really tough fictional issues that you tackle in the book.
You know, it was a real challenge, and here's the challenge of it. Pope Annalisa is really two books in a way. It, on one level, and this is why I think my suggestion to you to maybe do two readings of it, on one level, it's a page-turning thriller, and it gets involved in, you know, the world of geopolitics and military confrontations, murders, assassinations, and other events of that sort that float around this figure of Pope Annalisa. But on the other hand, it's about the recovery of genuine lost mystical traditions that were that are only now, I think, being recognized, and hopefully I think Pope Annalisa is going to be one of the leading books in exposing this current, we had these beautiful spiritual legacies that were part of early Christianity that were destroyed by the Orthodox Christian Church. And this spiritual legacy was really the mystical part of the church. There were these seers, and it's spelled S-E-E-R-S, who were called Gnostics back in the early centuries of Christianity. And the Gnostics were one of the two main branches of Christianity. And the Gnostics were the people who really penetrated these realms of divine energy and information in their meditations and brought back phenomenal information relating to our creation, the natural world, the human beings, who we are, where we came from, where we're going, what our purpose is. And so much of this information was destroyed and suppressed by powers that didn't really want it to come out, unfortunately. But on the other hand, we have recovered and we're piecing together the mosaic of what used to be the picture of this beautiful spiritual legacy. So the book also has much to do with that. And the real challenge, Rebecca, was to take these often really complex, you know, spiritual ideas and bring them into a fictional form that wouldn't kill the book, because you can't write a fictional book and make it sound like a scholarly text or make it sound like a non-fictional self-help book. Now, in one way, this book could have very well been a self-help book because it deals in the same kind of practical spirituality that is really affecting people's lives. And many people have said it's been a life-changing event for them to read this book. But it has to do it in a way that that complex spiritual material comes out to be understandable and organic and absorbed through your involvement with the characters and their lives. So yes, it was a challenge to do that, but I think by all accounts from the feedback I'm getting, people from all walks of life, from those who are very spiritually clued in to those who are just looking for, you know, a great thrilling read, seem to be relating to the book.
I guess another question too is because it has so much to do with Catholics, and that, and you know, she's a pope. Have you heard any backlash from the Catholic Church or anybody in that type of religious area?
Not formally, because the book has not been out that long, so I don't think the Catholic Church has had a chance to do a number on it, but I fully expect it will. I know we have a family priest who wasn't real happy with me when he read the book, but it's a good question, and let me make a couple points here. First of all, it's not a Catholic book. For those in the listening audience, it's a book that talks about transcendent spiritual wisdom through the vehicle of something that we're very familiar with, which is the Catholic Church. So the Catholic Church is just used to tell a universal tale. And, in fact, the Catholic Church is rather symbolic of the old order breaking down to make way for the new order in the form of this female pope. Now, to answer your question directly, the best anecdote I can give you is this. We have some family friends, very longtime family friends, who are very fundamentalist in their religious persuasion. And they heard that I'd written a book, and they were really after me to read the book. And I was a little reluctant to give it to them.
Right.
And finally, I broke down. I said, okay, here's the book, but I do want to tell you, in full disclosure, that there's things in here that may not be, you know, in keeping with your beliefs. Well, the bottom line is they read the book and they were wild about it and they couldn't wait for the next volume to come out. And I think the reason is this. This is not a church bashing book, and this is not a book that really tries to, you know, set up our patriarchal religious structures and say, oh, they're no good, let's smash them, let's destroy them. Because that's not the spirit that I wanted to write it in, and I don't think it's the spirit that the ancient Gnostics would have had. The way it views the church is, or let's say the church, or like, let's take any organized religion today. The way it views that is that those churches are maybe step, you know, let's call them intro 101 for spirituality, that they give people basic precepts and basic concepts to deal with, but the real purpose is to graduate from there, not to get stuck in there, which they would have you do, because obviously there's a little bit of authority and control and money, you know, involved in doing that. But the thing is to, you know, don't stay in first grade. You weren't meant to stay in first grade. You were meant to learn what you could in first grade and then go on to second grade. And that's the spirit that I think this book takes these matters in, that it views our spiritual path is just that. It's a progression, it's a road we go on, and we can stop at the way stations along the way, which might be a particular religious church or belief, but don't punch your ticket and don't sit there in the waiting room. You got to keep moving on and take what you can from one point to another.
I absolutely agree with you, because I know I was raised in a very strict Baptist home, and since then I've grown spiritually. Meaning I look in all different areas, what feeds my soul, what feeds my mind. And there's so much out there that, like you were saying earlier, has been hidden or suppressed. And then when you do research, there's so much research out there that it's almost mind-boggling about the different things. And then I know, just speaking for myself, when I started doing research, and Peter, maybe you came up across this over your 30 years of research too, you might have... Again, I'm speaking for myself. I know I started asking questions and started going, okay, well, I was taught this, but this feels right too. I mean, because there's so much out there that we don't honestly as human beings know. The spiritual world is big, huge, that your book and everything that you're talking about is, like you were saying earlier, a door to open people to really start thinking different ideas and having more thoughts of their own, et cetera. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this book wasn't meant to become another ism. It's not meant to be a Catholicism. It's not meant to be, you know, any other particular doctrine or dogma. In fact, what it's really talking about is how we can transcend all those doctrines and dogmas and, you know, get out of the box. And in that regard, it's really trying to give people ways and concepts to take their traditional backgrounds that we've mostly been raised in, you know, in this society, Judeo-Christian background, and to sort of think out of the box without smashing the box. You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, because there's good and bad and everything. And that's what it's really doing, but not trying to become, in effect, another form of religion or another box from people to jump into. I mean, if you visualize life as jumping from box to box, you don't really get anywhere. But it's the space in between those boxes where you really learn something. And that's what the book is trying to do, is trying to get people into that space between the box where they're free to walk and roam and experiment and, you know, give people some historically grounded concepts to deal with to help them along the path of their spiritual journey.
Well, I know that in the book, Pope Annalisa also criticized science and religion, and I've always been at the, you know, you hear science is one thing, religion is another, but honestly, I believe that both should be working together. Because they're both proving so much, and I hope that makes sense, because I know what I'm thinking here and what I've always thought. Is that your view on the thing, too, that science and religion actually should be working together, because together it could create bigger and better things, spirituality, more things for the world to expand in and make better?
The unfortunate thing about science and religion is that they each develop their own forms of orthodoxy, and they each develop their own icons and dogmas that they get stuck in, to the point where, you know, you have in the universities today the Darwinists running, you know, so many of the departments over there, and anybody that wants to talk about in intelligent creation or whatever is literally being drummed out of the faculties now. Now, who does that sound like? Doesn't that sound like the Catholic Church of the Middle Ages? And it all has to do with adhering, you know, dogmatically to a creed. Unfortunately, you would think scientists wouldn't do that. They would be more open-minded, but that is the case. So, you know, each side is guilty of that. But, again, if you step out of those boxes, there is a tremendous convergence of science and spirituality. And we probably don't have time to go into this show, but I could tick off so many fascinating ways that these Gnostic texts of 2,000 years ago, if you take the myths that the Gnostic seers used to describe what they saw, because remember, when you think about it, 2,000 years ago, we didn't have technology. We didn't have technological terms. The population wasn't that sophisticated or educated. When these people brought back this incredible information from their mystical journeys, the only vehicle they had to describe this to people in ways that they might comprehend was symbolically, and they did it through myths, and that's what a myth is. A myth is not a fantasy. A myth is an archetypical way of describing truths symbolically. And what these Gnostics predicted, so many modern theories of the forefront of science and quantum physics now, parallel universe, the Big Bang, the holographic universe theory, all these theories about the nature of our reality that are the cutting edge of science, almost every single one of them can be seen in the Gnostic text of 2,000 years ago. And why is this? Well, it could just be that when your subjective experiences brought back information from these higher realms start to intersect with the objective experience, which is the method of the scientific world, at the intersection of that inner and outer wisdom, maybe that's the closest thing to where truth is, that it's working in the same direction. And I think anybody that gives a really careful study of the Gnostic text would be blown away by how it can be so easily translated into our most advanced scientific theories today.
Yeah, and another point, too, is 2,000 years ago, like you were saying earlier, there wasn't the technology. And I think a lot of times we right now are so dependent on technology, and we're so busy doing things that we don't use our brains like they did 2,000 years ago. There's been studies I've watched on, I believe it was the History Channel, where they did research on UFOs, okay? And from, I mean, before technology, like the 1700s and 1800s, how there was only maybe horses delivering newspapers or something like that. But there's the same sightings all across the world. So they were proving that back then. Oh, and I just lost my point of thought. What I'm trying to say here is people use their brains more than or more open to mystical communications and God speaking, spirit speaking, whatever you believe in, speaking through your brain and your mind in meditation than they are now, because more people right now, I believe, and please don't, you know, get upset with me, listeners. This
Hello, this is Catherine
opinion.
Bradford.
Like,
thank you very much for joining me today. Imagine in the near future that we have the first female pope. Imagine she's a native of Nigeria.
What you hear and listen to, as people say, your intuition, you're missing out on a lot. And I can say, for one, there are times where I get so bombarded with technology and doing things, I just shut down that part of me. Peter, do you think that's basically where we're at right now, too?
Well, I think certainly we didn't have a lot of the distractions that, mm-hmm. you know, thousands of years ago that we have today, which are ways, usually distractions are ways of leading you outside yourself rather than ways of leading you, you know, inside on mm-hmm. inner journey. And I think that that's, you know, completely true. But they still had problems back in the ancient days that, mm-hmm. that you know, are with us today. And that right. is that when you really think about it, it's a question of responsibility. Now, we mm-hmm. hear a lot about responsibility in our society these days. It's become kind of a buzzword. You have to take mm-hmm. responsibility for this. You have to take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing we take the least responsibility for is our own spiritual growth.
Right.
And even back in ancient times, it was probably always easier for people to give up their power to outer authorities and go to church, go to mm-hmm. confession, be absolved by the priest, go home and feel like, you know, you got a chance of making it into heaven,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to seeking your own path, your own spiritual path, because that mm-hmm. means work, it means thought, and it also, you know, it's also not easy. I mean, when you really get into the deep spiritual road, you have a lot of realizations, and sometimes they're quite shocking, and you go through mm-hmm. dark nights of the soul, and, you know, you mm-hmm. go through all kind of things in the process of stretching your mind and stretching your mm-hmm. being. You know, sometimes when you stretch things, it gets a little painful, the stretching
Here
process.
You.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's really worth it in terms of the enlightenment we gain. And I think those kind of problems, you know, which is people concentrating on survival and taking away mm-hmm. from their spiritual seeking, that's been with us for time immemorial. But I will say one thing, Rebecca, that the early Christian period was a cusp of a huge change that went on. And the change was that there was a day when we were more intuitive, because the early religions were feminine in orientation.
Mm-hmm.
They recognized that the one energy expresses itself in two polar forces in this visible world, which they would call male and female.
Right.
And, you know, that even reflects in our own beings, our own brain structure. We have a right and left brain, and we have the, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of female characteristics of the right brain, which is design, creativity, intuition, feeling from the heart. And we have the logical left brain side of the male, which is logic, analytic logic, thinking with the mind, intellectual process, verbalization, linear thinking. So that energy really is reflective throughout all creation. It's as above, so below. It comes from above and it reflects below.
Mm-hmm.
But in the earlier days, they were closer to an understanding of the feminine aspect of this energy. And so the religions back in those days were much closer to nature, more intuitive, and they involved, you know, we've heard of the great mystery schools of the ancient days. It was almost like a university system that existed
mm-hmm.
in lands as far away as India all the way through the Mediterranean. They had these great mystery schools which taught philosophy, which taught mystic traditions of meditation and different ways to contact spirit. In fact, in many ways, they were probably more advanced than we are today. But that was destroyed in the early Christian era when the orthodox interpretation, the literal interpretation of the Christian story, kind of gained precedence, and that was a very patriarchal story. And at that point, it tipped the religions in the West into a far more, you know, I would say male-dominated religion, which is not what Jesus intended at all. He was a radical
right.
feminist, and he
right.
elevated women to positions that were scandalous. But that was soon destroyed after after the crucifixion.
Mm-hmm. And we're down to 4 minutes. I just want to give you since the one that I have here, Pope Annalise, that's just the first one in the first book one of the First Souls trilogy. Do you have the other ones ready right now to go out, or are they going to come out on a certain schedule?
Well, actually, they're not going to come out in a certain... The only schedule they're going to come out on is how long it takes me to market the first book. Because
okay.
it's a full-time effort to market Pope Annalise right now. I mean, it's probably the equivalent to a woman giving childbirth. It's pretty painful to birth a new book.
Oh, yeah.
Here. And it's very time-consuming, and it has taken
mm-hmm.
away from me, you know, completing the second
mm-hmm.
book. I hope to have the second book out by next year, but I really can't promise that. It depends on how, you know, the cards fall in terms
right.
of... first book out. But Pope Annalisa itself is available on Amazon.com, and it's also, it may not be in all bookstores yet because the publication date was just a couple weeks ago, but it's available for order through almost any major bookstore. If you go in and ask them about ordering Pope Annalisa, they should have it on their databases, and they should be able to order it for you.
And if anybody wanted to get more information about the book, about yourself, and all the different rewards, you do have a website where they can go and check everything out, correct?
I do. It's popeannalisa.com. That's PopeAnnalisa, one word, .com. And the website has a lot of information. It's got videos. It talks actually about the thematic background of the about the book, not so much about getting into details about plot and things like that. But more so about, you know, sort of the overall currents that went into the making of the book.
Well, I would definitely encourage my listeners to go over there. It's www.popeannalisa.com. And if you're listening to this later as an archive, just look on the show page and I'll have a live link. So all you have to do is go down there and click it. We have 3 minutes remaining, Peter. Is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with before we sign off?
I think just the thought that one of the main messages, or maybe probably the main message I wanted to convey in the book, is that in my life I've had the good fortune of being able to connect with a higher energy, and that really set the course of my life. It created a lot of miracles in my life, and it really set the course for my life from the time that I was a young adult, and that I don't think I'm unique in this, that I believe everybody has the ability to have that kind of a transformative experience and to connect with those higher energies. And the purpose of the book, the underlying purpose of the book, through looking at the lives of the characters and how things materialize in their lives, is to understand that you have a connectedness that's in you. We may have forgotten about it, but we're all deriving from that source, and we have that divine spark in us, and it's really our task to remember that. And as we work at remembering that, it does open up our beings to a direct experience with this divine intelligence. And when you have that experience, you no longer have to take anything else on faith, because faith is a proposition that you take secondhand from what the church or your parents or somebody else tells you. But when you have a direct experience, you own it. It's yours, and now you've passed over from the realm of faith into the realm of knowledge, and knowledge can only benefit your life.
So it's good to ask questions and seek your own truth.
I believe so.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Peter, for coming on Heal Yourself Talk Radio. Listeners, again, for more information, go to www.popeannalisa.com. You can also go to Amazon.com to order and purchase the book. I'm going to be right behind this saying, definitely order this book. If I'm sitting here saying it, you know it's a good book, because I'm very critical. Sorry. Not bad, but I am a book reader. Like everybody knows, I could start my own library. I have so many books. This is definitely a great read. Not only is it a great fictional read, but it's a great, as Peter was talking about this whole time, spiritual. It makes you really think and open up and expand your thinking. And that's one of the great basics of a book. So thank you again, Peter, for coming on Heal Yourself Talk Radio.